Good morning. Today, Daf in Yuma, Ayin Tes 79. Deep appreciation to the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the Daf. The Daf will be learned with Zecher Nishmas, Lois Zaltzman Lupin. We're on Ayin Ches Med Aleph, and we are discussing the Inuyim of Yom Kippur. Yesterday's Daf was the beginning of a discussion, actually. Prior to that, Ayin Zion really was the beginning of the discussion on some of the loopholes, leniencies that were allowed. Within the five Inuyim, talked about washing dirt off the body. We talked about applying some oil if the scalp is very itchy. So within the framework of Inuyim, so there's room for leniency, as we discussed back in Ayin Zayin Ayin Ches. Continuation of that discussion, how to cool off on Yom Kippur was a discussion that we just finished off. Ayin Chesamad Aleph, where the Gemara has a discussion of, obviously you're not allowed to pour water on your body to cool off, that's tanug, that's pleasure that you're not allowed to do, but the Gemara says cold fruit and the like you're allowed to apply to your body in order to help cool yourself down, using a hard metal, a cold silver to put against your body in order to cool down. In other words, as long as it's not water, you can use other methods of cooling down, air conditioner I guess, but the Gemara wasn't caught up yet with AC. Anyway, that's the Gemara that we went through yesterday. Ziri Bar Chama. So we are right in the middle of the Amud Ayin Ches Med Aleph. Could find us. First word in the line is Asur Mishum De Mizdarev. Okay, the Gemara now is going to continue. Basically, it's going to be a continuation of the discussion of some of the Heterim regarding the Inuyim. This is going to be like a very long intro. A really lengthy intro to get to the Gemara's point. Right, this happens every now and then. Oh, no, I'm sorry, not yet. This is another heter, and then we'll get to the introduction. I'm sorry. So Ziri Bar Chamush b'Zichnan, the Rabbi Ami, the Rabbi Asi, the Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi, the Kula Rabbanan de Kesaria. So Ziri Bar Chama was the host of a series of Rabbanim. Once again, Rabbi Amin, Rabbi Asi, they seem to be coming up again and again in the 8th Perek of Yuma, and Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, and all the rabbis of Kesara, and Hava Amalei Rabbi Yosef, Bered, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, and they would say the following to Rabbi Yosef, who happens to have been the son of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi was a great of Eretz Yisrael, a contemporary of Rabbi Yochanan, like one of the greats. So he says, Bar Arya, you're the son of a lion, meaning his reference to his father, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. So let's hear some incidents about your father. Let's hear some stories about your father. So mitpachas hayelo be'erev Yom Kippur. So he tells the following story. My father had a mitpachas, he had a shmata. On erev Yom Kippur, v'shoros be'mayim v'osoros k'min kelim neguvim. And so what he would do is he would soak the rag before Yom Kippur, but then he would squeeze it out. So it was going into Yom Kippur just a little bit damp. It was a little bit moist. But basically, he wrung out all the liquid inside. And the next day, in other words, the morning of Yom Kippur, he would use this very mildly moist rag to wipe his hands, his eyes, his feet. Good. That's basically a way of him being able to, quote-unquote, wash his face on Yom Kippur. So in other words, it was a rag that was just a little bit moist, a towel that was a little bit moist. Erev Tisha B'Av. Now, on Erev Tisha B'Av, Shor Oso B'Mayim, so he was more lenient on Tisha B'Av for the following. Well, I'll get to the reason in just a moment. First, let's describe what he did. So he would soak the Shmata before Tisha B'Av, on Erev Tisha B'Av, and then Lamachem Avir Al Gabi Einav, and the next day he wiped it over his eyes. Now, the thing with Tisha B'Av is he didn't wring it prior to Tisha B'Av, meaning he allowed all the water to be collected and saturated and fill the towel going into Tisha B'Av. What's the big difference? So the big difference is obvious. On Yom Kippur, there's an Isser Malacha. On Tisha B'Av, there's no Isser Malacha. They both have the Inui of Rechitza. You can't wash on both Yom Kippur and Tisha B'Av, but on Yom Kippur, there's a Malacha consideration, and on Tisha B'Av, there's not. Therefore, on Yom Kippur, you're not allowed to do Schita. You're not allowed to squeeze a liquid that's absorbed in a solid. Right, you're not allowed to squeeze fruit, and by extension, you're also not allowed to squeeze a towel that has liquid inside. So that's why prior to going into Yom Kippur, you had to squeeze it out before Yom Kippur in order to ensure that basically all the liquid has been extracted, and whatever's left is just basically a little bit of moisture left on the towel, which he's just going to simply wipe over his eyes. But going into Tisha B'Av, he didn't have to squeeze it out because, quite frankly, there's no malacha. There's no issa malacha of schita on Tisha B'Av. That's the difference, and that explains the distinction between his practice on Erev Yom Kippur and the practice on Erev Tisha B'Av. Kiyasa, we'll take out the word v'chein. Kiyasa Rava b'amari amari b'erev Tisha B'Av mevin lo mitpachas v'shorosa b'mayim o menicha tachas m'rashat tzavol amachim mekana panavi adav raglav. So similarly, Rabbi Bar Mari explained a very similar circumstance where in Tisha B'Av he would basically soak the towel but not wring it out. And Erev Yom Kippurim, Mevi'in lo mitzbachas v'shoros ha-bamayim, v'oso kimin, kelem neguvim l'machim avir agabe enav. And then on Erev Yom Kippur, once again, he would soak the towel, but then he would squeeze it out and leaving it only just mildly moist so that in the morning he'll just simply pass it over his eyes. Good. Ad kan. Amalei Rav Yaakov, Rav Yirmiya bar Tachlifa, Ibcha Martlan. You know, when you told the story, you switched it around. You told us the opposite. Meaning you told us that on Tisha B'Av, he wrung it out prior to Tisha B'Av, and in Erev Yom Kippur, he didn't wring it out. That's the way you originally told the story. But then, Osvichna Schita. But then we come back at you when we said to you, but that can't be. Meaning the version that you told us, which was the opposite, which you just told us, that can't possibly be the version because that would then mean that you'd have a saturated towel going into Yom Kippur. You'd be squeezing the saturated towel, and that would be a violation of Shechita. So the Gemara says that can't be. So the Gemara says the original version of the story is therefore correct. Okay. Now we'll get to the introduction. Amar Rav Menashe bar Tachlifa, Amar Rav Amar, Amar Rabba bar Bechana Shalus, Reb Elazar, Zakein v'Yoshev b'Yeshiva. Okay. Now, this first episode in question and answer really has nothing to do with Inuyim and Yom Kippur, nothing. But the Gemara points out that there's going to be one question, then there's going to be a follow-up question. We're interested, from an eighth parak of humor perspective, we're interested in the follow-up question. But we got to get through the first question. And the first question goes like this. They asked Rav Elazar Zaken, Yoshev, I'm sorry, they asked Rav Elazar the following. Zaken v'Yoshev b'Yeshiva. So let's say you're a zaken, you're an elder, and you are sitting and learning in yeshiva. So tzarich li tov reshus lahatir b'choros, o eino tzarich. So do you need permission in order to be matir b'choros, or do you not need permission? Okay, let's remind each other. Smicha back in the good old days. So first of all, smicha was genuine, meaning that smicha was passed down from generation to generation, going back to Moshe Rabbeinu. And smicha, meaning the real smicha, can only be given in Eretz Yisrael, can't be given outside Eretz Yisrael. All the Amoraim and Bavel did not have true traditional smicha. They had, you know, an honorific title. They were called Rav, but it's not a Rebbe. It's not. They don't have smicha. Fine. In terms of what smicha you're getting, so it depends on what you're fluent in. So if you know the halachas of Yoredeya, of Isser Veheter, so you got a smicha called Yore Yore. Fine. So it was question and answer. Yore Yore. Meaning, does he know the halachas in Isser Veheter? And the answer was, yeah, Yore. He does. Then there's another level of smicha, which is Yadin. Yadin. Does he know all the financial law? What we would call a Choshen Mishpat, based on the fourth, one of the four halakim of Shulchan Aruch. Does he know the laws of finances of money? So yeah, then yeah, he does. In other words, he could be a judge in monetary law. And then there's another smicha, which probably no one here has heard of, which is Matir's Bechoros. Does he know how to permit a Bechor? And the answer may be yes or no, depending on whether he does or he doesn't. This third level of smicha is basically you have to know physiology of an animal. Because we know that if you have a firstborn animal that has Kedushas Bechor, it has the sanctity of a firstborn animal. And in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, it's brought as a carbon. It's given to the Kohen. The Kohen brings it as a carbon. Without the Beis HaMikdash, so now what happens? It's given to a Kohen, but there's no Beis HaMikdash. So you have to wait till it gets a blemish. Once it gets a blemish, then and only then can he shecht and eat it. Okay, so waiting for it to get a blemish so that it becomes disqualified from the Mizbeach has to happen naturally. He cannot inflict the animal with a blemish. And then and only then, when it happens naturally, organically, does he go to a chacham who has the third level of smicha, of matyos b'choros, and gives the animal to this musmach. The musmach looks at the animal based on his education and his you know, his training, he will see whether or not this blemish is a permanent blemish or just a passing blemish, and he'll render whether or not the animal can be eaten by the kohen or cannot be eaten by the kohen. Okay, that's all the basics, that's the background. Question on the table, says the Gemara, is the following. Now, generally speaking, in order to be authorized in being Mater Bechara, so you need permission. You need to go to the Sanhedrin and you need to ask for permission. Let me take that back. You don't go to the Sanhedrin, I'm sorry, you go to the Nasi. And you ask permission from the Nasi in order, you need to be authorized. Okay?
Highest level of
to get the smicha and to practice the smicha, so it's much like licensing in this country. You need to be authorized by the Nasi.
It was higher level, right?
It was the way the Gemara presents it, it's Yori Yore, then Yadin Yadin, and then Matus Bechoros. So the Gemara says, generally speaking, if you get such smicha, so you need to get permission. The Gemara wants to know, Zaken v'yoshev b'yeshiva. But what about this person who's already an elder, he's already learning yeshiva, he already has status, so does he need licensing, so to say? Okay. So, my kami baile, hachi kami baile, the Gemara just articulates the question a little clearer. So the reason why is because basically it provides prominence to the Beis Nasi. Meaning it gives them clout and credence, so that they are the ones who are going to be providing the licenses. Fine. So Zarech L'Tovishos. So the Gemara says, so therefore, in other words, if the whole purpose of getting permission from the Beis Nasi is to provide clout for the Beis Nasi, so therefore they have to go and ask permission. Because it doesn't matter what your status is, clout has to be given to the Beis Nasi. On the other hand, on the other hand, this particular person has so much clout that maybe there is no requirement for him to go and receive permission. So Amar Rav Tzadok ben Chalukah Raglava Amar. It sounds more like a licensing issue. In other words, it doesn't sound like the actual smicha itself. Right, the Gemara here is really focusing on the reshus, meaning permission to paskin. So it sounds more like a licensing issue. So Rabbi Tzadok bar Chaluka al Raglav Amar Ani Reisis Rav Yossi ben Zimri Shezakim Yerusha Vishiva. So Rav Yossi ben Zimri actually qualified exactly as we just described, where he was a zakin, he was sitting in yeshiva haya va'amar b'malam mizikno shozeh, and he stood at the steps of his grandfather, meaning pointing to the Nasi, this Nasi's grandfather, and he asked permission, meaning he needed authorization. And so the answer is, yeah, you always need to ask and you always need to be authorized. Okay. So Amalei Rabbi Abba lo kachaya, maisa la kachaya, maisa Rav Yosef ben Zimri kohen haya. So the Gemara says, no, you got the question and answer wrong. Meaning that wasn't exactly the question and answer. The question and answer went more like this. The Rav Yosef ben Zimra happens to have been a kohen. Can you paskin bechoros if you're a kohen? Now, can you paskin bechoros for yourself? The answer, of course, is no. In other words, if you have a vested interest in something, so the idea that you're going to rule on something where you have a vested interest obviously makes you no longer objective. It makes you now obviously a biased participant in the ruling, and so therefore you can't be objective and you can't rule. That's obvious. But let's say you're a kohen and you're not asked to be matir b'chor for yourself, you're asked to be matir b'chor for somebody else. So the question is as follows. If you're disqualified for ruling for yourself, are you therefore disqualified for ruling for others? This is a machlokus, a basic machlokus between Rabbi Meir and Rav Shimon Gamliel. It's machlokus tanayim. Rav Meir says no. Once you're disqualified for yourself, you can't paskin for others as well. And Rav Shimon Gamliel is mekel. So the Gemara just simply wants to know the question over here. The question and answer was much simpler. Or, I don't know about simpler, but it went basically like this. Who do we follow? Do we follow like Rabbi Meir? Do we follow like Rav Shimon Gamliel? And the answer was very straightforward. Upasha le, last line of the Amud, halacha k'Rav Shimon Gamliel. The halacha is like Rav Shimon Gamliel in that you can't paskin for yourself, obviously, but you, or Kohen, can paskin and rule on Bechor for others. Period. Adkan. Okay. That takes us through a lengthy introduction. Again, it's not an introduction, it's just simply question number one. Question number one, two versions of what question number one was regarding the permission of Bechoros, them being Matir Bechoros. The first version of the question was, if you're a Zakim Yoshev Yeshiva, do you still need authorization? Or is it okay if you just, in other words, because of your own status, you don't need to be authorized? And the answer was, you still need authorization. Version number two of question number one is that if you're a Kohen, can you pass him Bechoros for other Kohanim, even though we know you can't pass him for yourself? And the answer was, we pass him like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. The answer is, yes, you can. Okay. Ad Kan, that takes us all through question number one. And Visu Kami Ba'ilahu, and now we get to question number two. On Yom Kippur. We know that one of the five inuim in Yom Kippur is Ni'ila Sasandal. You can't wear leather shoes. So the Gemara says, okay, what if it's not leather? What if the shoes are made out of Sha'am? Sha'am, some sort of vegetable reed, right? I have in my notes bulrush. I don't know what that means. Doesn't matter. Okay, in other words, it's a shoe not made out of leather. Shoe made out of a reed. Okay? On Yom Kippur. So is that okay or is that not okay? Our Mishnah says, leather, is it specific to leather or is it any shoe? So Amar Rav Yisrael ben Nachman al-Raglav, Amar Ani Raisi is Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Once again, the Gemara quotes again Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, and I saw him, Shiyatza b'sandal shosham b'yom ha-kippurim. So, Maisa Rav, I saw Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi actually go out on Yom Kippur with reed, with shoes made out of reed. V'amin alu b'tanit tzibur mine, I asked him, well, okay, fine, Yom Kippur. What about tanit tzibur? Now, it's funny. In other words, you would think that if it's permitted on Yom Kippur, it for sure would be permitted on a tanit tzibur. Tanit tzibur, status-wise, not as chamor, not as stringent as Yom Kippur. So it's interesting, like, what was the thought process in this question and answer where the Gemara now wants to know, can we apply the leniency to Tanit Sibur? Now, by the way, Tanit Sibur, just to be clear, not talking about, I mean, right, we're unfamiliar with Tanit Sibur, right? We're talking now, when we get to Masech Tanis, we're going to speak about this at length, but we're talking about in Eretz Yisrael, where the rain season has begun and no rain has come down. So a series of fasts begin. The fasts get more and more stringent, more and more severe. Anyway, these are Tanit Sibur. These are the public fast days. So the Gemara, and it gets to the point where they're so stringent that you take on the inuyim, you take on all the afflictions that we would take on Yom Kippur. So the Gemara wants to know, is this heter going to be also be true for Tanit Sibur? Amalei lo shna, and the answer is very straightforward, no difference. Meaning, just like on Yom Kippur, you could wear the shoes made out of reeds, so too on Tanit Sibur as well. Amar Rabba Baruch Hanani Reisis Rabba Lazar Demin Ninvei. So here, the same discussion, we just start from the other place, where he wore the shoes made of reed on Tanit Sibur, and then I just asked him, can we do the same on Yom Kippur? And his answer was, no difference, meaning yes you can, it's fine. Rav Yehuda Nafik Bidehitni. So now the Gemara just simply gives us anecdotal information. Rav Yehuda went out wearing these types of reed shoes, Abai Nafik Bidehutsi. Rabbi went out with shoes that were made out of reeds, Hutsim. We'll see a lot of that word used in Sukkah when describing the lulav, so some sort of palm frond. Rav Nafik Bidevili or Bidikule. And Rava went out also wearing reed shoes. Rava by Rav Huna karach suja akari v'nafek, and Rava Rav Huna would basically wrap his feet up and go out with some sort of reed to basically soften and give more comfort for his feet as he was standing the whole day. Adkan, not Adkan, but good. So, question was: this is the second question that they asked. Question was: can I wear sandal shel sha'am? So shoes made not of leather, but of other material. Answer is basically yes. Okay, now, the way we're going to tackle this Gemara coming up is as follows. I'm going to follow the Pshat of Rashi, okay? As we normally do, meaning that's generally speaking how we are, how we work here in the Daf. But mind you, however, the conclusion of Rashi is not going to be the conclusion that we're used to hearing. Okay, so, And mind you, the halacha is not going to necessarily follow what we're about to suggest in the Gemara, But again, I'm just saying the Gemara over like Rashi's Pshat. Okay, let's say this out. We now know that you're allowed to wear the shoes made out of reed on Yom Kippur, but you're not allowed to make shoes made out of leather. The question is pretty straightforward. I'll ask it very succinctly. What's the difference? Why are shoes made of leather good? I'm sorry, are prohibited, and shoes made out of bulrush okay? But what's
called a shoe?
So that's basically how Rashi is going to understand this entire discussion. So what Phil's suggesting is that if it's made out of bulrush, if it's made out of reed, it's just simply not a shoe. Meaning, by definition, it does not have the status of a shoe. Meaning, a shoe is only made out of leather. That's a shoe. But if it just simply, it's like almost like wearing a sock, if you will. Socks are not shoes. Socks don't have status of shoes. So maybe what the issue is in the Gemara and the basic definition, the distinction between the minal shell, the minal made out of leather versus a minal made out of any other material, is simply its status of whether it is or is not considered a shoe. Now, that's the way the Gemara presents itself according to Rashi. Now you'll see where we're going to go with this discussion. In the Gemara Masiv Rami Bar Chama, we're Ein Ches Amud Beis, we're about 20 lines down from the top of the Amud, and the Gemara now is going to ask the following question. Masiv Rami Bar Chama Hakita Yosef Bekav Shalot Divrei Rabbi Meir Rav Yosi Oser. In Shabbos we had this discussion, debate, whether or not you can have an amputee go out with a prosthetic. Okay, now the prosthetic back then, obviously not the same as prosthetics that we have nowadays. Right, the engineering nowadays is unbelievable. Back then when they were talking prosthetic, they were just talking like, like the pirates. I was thinking the same thing, right? Like the pirates with the peg leg. So in other words, some basic, like real rudimentary prosthetic, it basically was just a wooden stump attached to his leg. So, Hakite Yosef Bekav Shalo, Divrei Rabbi Meir. So Rabbi Meir says, and on Shabbos, he can go out with it. And Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yossi says, no, he cannot. Okay. Step one. So it's a machlokas whether or not he can walk out with a prosthetic or he cannot walk out with a prosthetic. Now take a look at Rashi. Rabbi Yossi Oser. Rashi writes, Kasavar Lav Minalhu. Because Rabbi Yossi is of the opinion that this is not a shoe. Rashi continues, Ho'veinu shava b'chol, because it's not uniform, it's not universal, it's not what people wear. Understood that this amputee needs to wear it, but again, the issue over here is whether it is or not considered a malbush. Ve'afilu hachi shavin sha'asolatzis bo b'yom ha'kippurim. And we'll get to, all right, I should have read on in the Gemara, but Rashi points out, the Gemara is going to tell us in just a moment, everyone's in agreement that you can't go and wear this on Yom Kippur. Rashi then writes, and this is critical to the discussion, Alma, Alfa Gavdil Rav Yossi Lav Minalhu, according to Rav Yossi, despite the fact that it's not his shoe, Afilo Hachi Aser, V'hu Adin L'shol Sha'am, it's going to be prohibited even though it's not a shoe, it doesn't have the status of a shoe, and therefore the same thing should be true regarding a Sandal Shol Sha'am. Even though it's not a shoe, but you're wearing it on your feet for comfort, and therefore it too should be prohibited. Okay, so in other words, the way Rashi's setting up the Gemara's question, what the Gemara is assuming going into the discussion is that the whole distinction between what you can and cannot wear on Yom Kippur is whether it is a shoe or it isn't a shoe. And meanwhile, this Bryce is teaching us, I haven't read the Bryce yet, but I will in just a moment. This Bryce is telling us that even if it isn't a shoe, you still can't wear it on Yom Kippur. So then our entire distinction now falls apart, and we now are left wondering, why am I allowed to wear the reed shoe on Yom Kippur? Let's see this inside. Hakiteh yotze bekav shalot div rabbi meir, rabbi yosi oster v'tini Allah, and we learned in a brace of a shavin, sha'asar latzeis bo by Yom HaKippurim. The amputee cannot walk out with his prosthetic on Yom Kippur. And again, now, so according to Rashi, the question becomes the following. Rav Yossi is of the opinion that it's not a shoe. Evident by the fact that Rav Yossi says that the amputee cannot go out with it on Shabbos because you can only wear clothing on Shabbos, shoes on Shabbos. The fact that Rav Yossi prohibits him from walking out with this means that it's not a shoe. Okay. So, and meanwhile, they both agree, Rav Yossi and Rabbi Meir, that in Yom Kippur you can't wear it, even though it doesn't have shoe status. So now we're left with just wondering now, So why can I wear the reed shoe on Yom Kippur? Amar Abaye Hasim Dis Beketita Mimushim Tanuk. So Abaye attempts at an answer. Now I say attempts because I know what's coming next. Abaye says, well, the issue is not has nothing to do with shoes and wearing shoes, and that's not the issue. The issue is comfort. On Yom Kippur, we want to afflict ourselves. We need to afflict ourselves. The Torah says that we need to do that. And there are going to be cushions and padding within the prosthetic, and it's going to provide the amputee with additional comfort. That's why he can't wear it on Yom Kippur. That's Abaye's understanding of why it's prohibited, having nothing to do with whether it is or it isn't a shoe. Amrle Rava, so Rava says, no, can't be. You can't be right. V'ilav manuhu ketita mashrele manu, meaning, let's think about this. Right? If it's the first point, if it does not have the status of a kli, meaning a kli in this context means a shoe, or in other words, whatever you want to call the prosthetic, if it doesn't have the status of a kli, so now all of a sudden I add some rags and some cushions to it and some stuffing, and now you're going to tell me that it's the status of a kli. Hard to imagine. Meaning, as Rashi points out, the Mishnah over there says that with ketitim inside, with the cushions inside, it now has the status of a kli and subject to tuma. It's susceptible to tuma. So the Gemara says, so I understand, what did the cushions do to convert it into a kli? Question number one. Vod kol tanug galav minohu b'yom kippur mi'asar. And the Gemara points out, tanug on Yom Kippur, no, tanug has a very specific definition. We know what the definition of tanug is on Yom Kippur. Eating, drinking, washing, anointing, right? Marital relations, leather shoes. Meaning the Mishnah is very specific in terms of what we have to refrain from. But if we want other enjoyments than Yom Kippur, that's fine. We just got finished learning just a moment ago that there would be those Amoraim who would wrap their feet up to make themselves more comfortable. Comfort is not an issue on Yom Kippur. Comfort within the context of the defined inuyim is the only issue on Yom Kippur. But if you want to make yourself more comfortable, and the Gemara could have noted also that we saw that they cooled themselves down using other methods other than just cold water. So in other words, if you can find a means to make yourself more comfortable on Yom Kippur, by all means, it's fine. And just textually, your answer does not seem to be correct, Rava says to Abaye. Because the Mishnah over there sounds like only in the second half of the Mishnah were there rags and cushions introduced into the prosthetic. In the first half of the Mishnah, there were no rags and there were no cushions. So, just from a textual standpoint, doesn't sound like your answer is right. So therefore, the Gemara basically asks four straightforward questions against Abaye's answer. Elama Rava, so la olam dekule ama minohu. So Rava says, no. The truth of the matter is that it is a shoe. The prosthetic is considered a shoe. And that's why you can't go out with it on Yom Kippur, because it has the status of a shoe. And now go back to the machlokes between Rav Meir and Rav Yossi. Rav Meir says that the amputee can go out with it on Shabbos. Rav Yossi says that an amputee cannot go out with it on Shabbos. So the Gemara now wants to know, well, what's the machlokes between Rabbi Meir and Rav Yossi? So over Shabbos, ba'apligi marsav gazrin and dami mishtam mevasil asui dal amos marsav lo gazrinan. It comes back to a classic debate that we've said over and over again, and that is that with shoes, we're not worried about shoes falling off, but the prosthetic, because it is not as secure onto the stump of the amputee, so therefore the concern is maybe it'll fall off and maybe he'll end up carrying it for Amos and Rosh Hashanah. Did the rabbis make Gzera? Did the rabbis not make Gzera? According to Rabbi Meir, the rabbis did not make Gzera, and according to Rabbi Yossi, the rabbis did make Gzera. Which, by the way, as a parenthetical note, is not normally how we would have played Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Meir would usually be the one who would be more Machmir, and Rabbi Yossi would be more Makeup. Okay, but I say that as a parenthetical note. Period. Now what comes out from this Gemara, did you just see what happened? Well, the Gemara basically explained is that the prosthetic really is a shoe. This is Rava's answer, and this is the answer the Gemara accepts. That really the prosthetic really is a shoe. And the reason why, and the only machlokas regarding Shabbos is a Shabbos issue. Of whether we're worried that the amputee is going to end up fall off his leg, his stump, and he's going to end up carrying it, but in actuality it's a shoe. Observe what just happened according to Rashi in the Gemara's conclusion. In the Gemara's conclusion, basically, as long as it has the status of the shoe, immaterial of what it's made out of, you can't wear it on Yom Kippur. Right? And the only thing that you're allowed to do on Yom Kippur is basically wrap your feet up with reeds, with some sort of palm fronds. But once it categorizes as a shoe, you can't wear it. That's how the Gemara ends up, according to Rashi. Yeah.
You don't have to say that. Say it's only a shoe regarding that's what he needs. For him, it's a shoe, but not for materials unimportant.
Right.
Yom Kippur is different. I mean,
I understand that. But again, I'm just presenting the Gemara like Rashi. In fact, you take a look at the Rashi. Minal hu, hilkach miyom ha-kippurim aser, aval dehini v'duhutza lav minal ninhu. Rashi says it very clearly.
Those are also made like a shoe. Those could be made like a shoe.
I guess. But, I mean, from Rashi's standpoint, I mean, there's a couple of Rashis that speak to this. From Rashi's standpoint, the whole distinction is whether it is a shoe or it does not have the status of the shoe. And the material, according to Rashi, it makes no difference. Meaning it's just a question of, when I go to the shoe store, am I going to find that sold as a shoe? If I am, I can't wear that on Yom Kippur. That's the conclusion according to Rashi. Now, I noted from the beginning, I'm going to explain the Gemara like Rashi, but then it comes out that according to Rashi, you can't wear in Yom Kippur shoes. Doesn't matter what it's made out of. You just can't wear a shoe. Whereas if the Hutzal and all the things that we mentioned, all the Azamarayim, basically what they did is they wrapped their feet up with some sort of material, so then when they walk outside, they're a little bit more comfortable. But you can't wear shoes. Yes?
Rashi's position makes sense.
Agreed. Meaning Rashi is what is a very simple and presentable explanation of our Gemara. Correct. But then it makes us uncomfortable because we all, you know what we all do on Yom Kippur and on Tisha B'Av. So we wear shoes, just not made out of leather. So the way I'm presenting the Gemara is not the accepted halacha. Now, how would you explain the Gemara otherwise? So that's going to be on another occasion, not right now. Okay, so, but hopefully I'm being clear. Meaning, the way the Gemara is being presented right now is just a simple Rashi presentation of the Gemara. Now, you want to know how the halacha comes out, so you have to learn the Gemara again with other Rishonim, Ran, the Rif. Okay, and anyway, you get the idea. Tanu Rabbanan, we're going on the Gemara, we're halfway down the Amunai and Ches Amud Beis. Hatinokus Mutarim Bekulan Chutz Min Hilas HaSandal. With a child. Not chinuch age. But yeah, in other words, a child. So you could do everything we mentioned in our Mishnah except for putting on leather shoes. Bathe them, no problem. Rub oil on him, no problem. Obviously other things we mentioned. No, but you understand. So Maishna Nila Sasandal, Damre, Inshi Abdul. I'm sorry, Damre, Inshi Abdulai. So the Gemara says, now why not leather shoes on a child? What's the issue? So the issue is, says the Gemara, that because you know that if he's wearing leather shoes on the day of Yom Kippur, not the night, but on the day of Yom Kippur. So that means somebody put him on him, an adult put him on him. So Hanach Nami, Amri Inshi Abdullah. Now the Gemara says, okay, but if you see a child nice and bathed on Yom Kippur, so people are going to say that an adult bathed him. So Rechitz V'sicha Imar Me'et Mo Abdullah. So the Gemara says, no, because there's no, I guess I'll call Marsine. Marsine really isn't the issue, but if you see a child nice and fresh and bathed on Yom Kippur morning, could be that he got a good bath yesterday. If you see him with like oil, could be that he was rubbed with oil yesterday. Meaning it's no problem bathing and rubbing oil on him today. Although the truth of the matter is the bather is going to get wet. But in of itself, that's not the issue. And in terms of what people are going to say, well, people can arrive at the conclusion that really this occurred yesterday. So the Gemara says, Sandalami, my maid, Ma'av delay. So the Gemara says, with shoes, can't you argue that maybe the person who put shoes on yesterday? The Gemara says, no, you can't argue that. Sandalasha de Mahatma Avdilay, Dama Shmuel, Haimanda by Lemitim Tama de Misusa, Lesayim Misane Veligne. Shmuel says it is unhealthy to go to sleep with shoes on. Now, I cannot explain this medically. I don't understand this medically. It doesn't matter. But Shmuel, who was a doctor, right? He was a physician. So Shmuel says that if you want to taste the taste of death, so go to bed with shoes on. It was very unhealthy to sleep with shoes. So if you see a child with shoes on Yom Kippur morning, everyone knows Shmuel's rule. Everyone follows Shmuel's medical advice. No one goes to bed with shoes on. So obviously somebody put the shoes on him on Yom Kippur morning. That's why the child cannot go out with shoes on Yom Kippur. But the bathing and the oil, no one's going to arrive at the absolute conclusion that this happened today on Yom Kippur. So,
parents decided to leave the shoes on for one night.
Correct, but we're talking. This is strictly a perception issue, and from a perception standpoint, no one will consider that as a possibility because that was not normative behavior at the time. And the Gemara says now, the Gemara says strange because it says mutan, which is lechatchila. Right, in other words, you're allowed to do this. So the Gemara says, okay. Well, the Gemara says that's not really the explanation of why there's a difference. Here's the explanation of why there's a difference. Why it is that you can bathe and anoint a child on Yom Kippur, but you can't put shoes on him on Yom Kippur. So the Gemara says, "Ela hanach de lav revisayu gazrubu rabbanan hanach de revisayu hu lo gazrubu rabbanan." The Gemara says, look, when all said and done, he's a child who does not have to follow the inuyim of Yom Kippur. And then we have to take into consideration the following. What is developmentally necessary for a child? The Gemara is about to explain, and again, the Gemara is obviously speaking from its framework. Bathing and oil is developmentally necessary for a child. So therefore, in Yom Kippur, you can bathe the child. You can put oil on the child, because that's developmentally necessary for his growth. It's not clear from the Gemara. But in other words, we're speaking about below chinuch age. Because at chinuch age, you got to get him, you know, you got to get him into the habit.
I understand one thing. What's the catch? I mean, the Lysa says,
that's part of the Bible, no? But we want to know what the difference is. And the first explanation was, well, the difference is what people can say. People can say.
Ask him by the question. Why is it
You know? Yeah, because the way the Brisa sounds like, the Brisa says, don't worry about what people say. The Brisa says, lechatchila, you could take a child and put him in the bath in Yom Kippur. And even in front of other people. Meaning there doesn't seem to be any hesitation of bathing a child on Yom Kippur. To which the Gemara now says, okay, the new explanation of Rava is, it really makes no difference. Meaning, he's a child, he's not bound by the inuyim of Yom Kippur. And now it's just a question of, what is developmentally necessary? To Amar Abai Amri Le'em, Abai quotes his mother, and as we've said time and again, it's not his mother. It's a woman who raised him. So he was an orphan. The mother died at childbirth. Gemara Kedushin says, so im revisa dienuka mayachamim o mashchei. So, I'm sorry, I'm really aim, revisa dienuka, the development of a child, we're talking about the physical development of a child, requires mayachamim o mashchei, hot baths and oil. Gadol porta, he grows up a little now, it's interesting, he doesn't give us any ages over here, so I can only guess, I don't have enough information to tell you. Like how much older? What age we're talking about now? Bagad the porta, but he grows a little bit more. Biyata bekutcha, eggs, right? Protein diet, if you will. But eggs with kutach, the famed cheese dip of Bavel. Bagad the porta. Now the child gets a little bit older. Tibure mane. You know what's very good for the development of a child? Let him break things. Okay, the tendency of children is they like to break things. And Abaye says, good, let him break things. In fact, Kihada Rabba Zavin Lahu Mane Gezize De Pachra Livne Umetabra Lahu. In fact, Rabba will go out of his way to buy basically cheap utensils. Made out of earthenware. Right, second time we just had the word pachra. A cheap utensil made out of earthenware. Handed over to his child, and basically he said to his child, "Okay, go to work." And what does his child do? Picks it up and breaks it. So you have a child in your house, and he breaks something. So you say to yourself, "Now, change your whole perspective on the raising of children." Well, that's good. I'm glad you broke that. That's excellent for his development. Okay. All right. The Viter.
Seinfeld says that they are cracked utensils.
Yeah. No, he's
really not.
Rashi. I mean, let's credit Rashi for saying it first. Rashi says kalim sedukim shocheres. They're right. They have cracks in them. Okay. Hamelch v'akala yichutz was paneim. Okay. We continue. The Gemara now speaks about the leniencies of a king and a wife and a new wife. So they can wash their face. Masnimani Rabbi Chanani ben Trajon. So first of all, attribution. Who is the author of this point in the Mishnah? So it's Rabbi Chanani ben Trajon. The Gemara goes on to explain. The Tanya Melantan by Samelch Vakala Lo Yerchitzu Es Panayim. The Tanakama says that they cannot wash their face. Rabbi Chanani ben Trajon. Omer Mishum Rabbi Eliezer. So Rabbi Chanani ben Trajon says in the name of Rabbi Eliezer, Amelch Vakala Yerchitzu Es Panayim. No, they can. They're allowed to wash the face. Hachai lo tinos a sandal. Echai, a woman who just gave birth, cannot wear sandalim. Rabbi Chanan ben Trajono, Mishum Rabbi Eliezer, Echai, tinos a sandal. No, she can wear sandalim. Again, this braisa doesn't give us more information than our Mishnah. Really, our Mishnah told us all this. The only thing that we learned new, and it must be significant, although I can't articulate why, is that it's Rabbi Chanan ben Trajan who is quoting Rabbi Eliezer. That's the only new piece of information in this braisa, and it's got to be significant. I just cannot tell you why. So my time, the Gemara now wants to know why, meaning, okay, so we have now the Mishnah, we have now the braisa. Why? Why? Well, what's the heter based on? So my time, Malch Mishum Dichsev, Malch Biyafiyotecha Zenei Necha. Rashi quoted this back in the Mishnah. He got it from the Gemara, obviously. A king's got to look good. You're the king. You have to have a regal appearance. It's so important to have a regal appearance. It is going to be, it allows you to violate the inui of Rechitza. Which again, we go back to the point that Tosus made earlier, Tosus Hashanah made the point earlier, it must be that this Inui is not an Inui min HaTorah. Because it's hard to imagine that a Pasuk in Mishle would allow us to override, I'm sorry, Yeshayahu would allow us to override an Inui min HaTorah. And Kala, my time of Kedishol Tizkana Abala. And a Kala, because she's newly married. And the courtship in the good old days was, you know, short, sweet, and maybe they met once or twice. And the parents arranged the marriage. And they don't really know each other. And they're just getting to know each other after the marriage. So she is allowed to look and encouraged to look presentable even on Yom Kippur. So Amalei Rav L'Rabbi Chiya Kalad Kama Amalei Kedetanya Emon Netachshitem and Akala Kol Shoshim Yom. So the Gemara here quotes from the Gemara Ksuvos. 30 days after the marriage, she has the status of a kala. So that would mean that if Yom Kippur falls out within 30 days of her marriage, so she could still wash her face in the morning. Hachaya tenos asanda mishim sina. Chaya, we're worried about the cold. Amashmul imachma sakanas akrav mutter. If we're worried about scorpion bites and you walk around in an area, in a society, in a community where scorpions are out there and they bite, so everyone's allowed to wear shoes because you're now talking about sakanas nefashos. Ha'ochel kikoseves hagasa. Okay, and here we begin. First of all, we're beginning today's daf. Okay, that was a lengthy point to get to today's daf, but okay, that's good. And now, today, tomorrow, a lot of shear discussion. Shear means amount, requisite amounts. Okay, we remind ourselves that whenever we talk about shear, we go back to the Gemara in Sukkah. The Gemara in Sukkah says in the beginning that shiurim, together with mechitza, together with chatzitzim, are halacha l'moshe misinai. These are all traditions. Nowhere in the Torah does the Torah give us amounts. How much need to, it's a bench. How much do you need to eat to sit in the sukkah? How much do you need to eat on Yom Kippur in order to violate the Isser of Inui? We don't have amounts given to us in the Torah. It is part of the oral tradition. This is a halacha l'moshe misinai. I've told you before. The Rambam takes the Torah Shebaal Peh and he breaks it up into five different parts, five different components of Torah Shebaal Peh. The first is what he calls Perushim HaMukubalim, meaning this is the accepted pshat of the Torah. Right? We just saw in yesterday's Parsha, Ayin Tachas Ayin, it doesn't mean an eye for an eye. I poke out your eye, you do not have the right to poke out my eye. Even though that's what the Torah says. Ayin Tachas Ayin means, I'll pay you, I'll compensate you for the loss of your eye. Right? That's the Perushim HaMukubalim, that's just simply the accepted pshat. The Gemara in the 8th Perek of Baba Kama goes through a lengthy discussion of how we know this, but Rambam says, when all said and done, we know because Perushim HaMukubalim. The second category, says the Rambam, of Torah Shabbat Peh is Halacha Moshe Misinai, meaning this is just simply the oral tradition. It's not based on any Pasuk and Chumash, it's just simply, this is part and parcel, the tradition that was given to Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai and passed down from generation to generation. Good. So we have a Halacha Moshe Misinai. And as you can imagine, there's still going to be some room to discuss, ponder, consider, and you'll see what I mean as we go through today's daf. We'll begin today's daf. I even venture to say we'll get to the first amud of today's daf. Thank you, Tosfos. And we'll start the discussion now. Ha'ochel kikoseves hagasa. Our Mishnah says that in Yom Kippur, if you eat the size of a date, you will violate the Inui of Yom Kippur. meaning you will have been satiated, you are no longer afflicted, and therefore you're in violation of kippah. How about eating less than a kosevet segasa? So we already said back in the beginning of the perek, no, you can't. Now, that's what we called chatzi shir. Now, is chatzi shir asr min haTorah? That's a machlokas between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish, but even according to Reish Lakish, as the Gemara pointed out, it's still asr min derabanan, rabbinically you can't do it. So you can't eat any amount on Yom Kippur, but in terms of violating Yom Kippur with a punishment, so then you have to eat a shir. The requisite shir is that of a date. Now the Mishnah described it as being kosevas hagasa, a plump date. So the Gemara says, kikosevas sha'amru begarina, I'm sorry, so by Rav Papa. So Rav Papa's question goes like this. Kikosevas sha'amru begarinasa or shol begarinasa? With or without the pit? Okay. Now, Rashi notes, remember the Mishnah? Funny question by Rav Papa. Meaning, if you turn all the way back to the Mishnah, oh my gosh, we've been here for a while. If you go back to the Mishnah answers it, doesn't it? The Mishnah says, "Ha'ochel kekosefes agasa kamoa uchegari nisa." You eat it and the pit. Meaning, obviously, we're not talking about eating the pit. Meaning, we're talking about the volume of it in its pit. So Rashi's wondering, basically, out loud, why are we asking the question when the Mishnah seems to be addressing this straight on, and the Mishnah actually uses the word pit, which sounds like we're talking about the volume of the date plus the pit. So how can Rav Papa even be entertaining this question? Rashi writes, V'hadiktani masnitsin uchegar niseha, mibay lehechi kamar kamo uchegar niseha yachad. Or maybe what the Mishnah means is, which was basically, I would venture to say what we all thought the Mishnah meant, which is the meat, the flesh of the date, and the pit combined, the total volume. Odilma, Rashi writes, Achi Kamar, Kamoa, right, Kamoa, oh, right, the Bach inserts an important word, O Kigari Nasa, either the flesh or the pit. Meaning, and right now, I guess what we're assuming is that they're of equal volume, meaning the flesh of a date or the pit of the date. Gemara's going to talk about that, and we'll get to that tomorrow. But anyway, but maybe that's the way to read the Mishnah. Okay. By Rav Ashi. Okay, Rav Ashi says, I have a question regarding another shear, and that is the shear of bone. The halach is that if you touch human remains, we're talking now strictly about the bone, so you become tame. But tumas mase from a bone only comes either bimaga or bimasa. There's no ohel when it comes to a bone chip. So if you touch a fragment of a bone, of human remains, so you only become tame if you touch it or if you carry it. How much bone chip do you need? So the halacha Moshe Mitzrayim is the amount of a barley kernel, a kernel of barley. So etzim kisaora. This is the halacha of etzim kisaora. Biklipasa. Oh, below klipasa, with or without the shell. Barley comes in a shell. We peel the shell off. We eat the kernel inside. So when we're taught, when the halacha Moshe Mizina was given to us, that if I touch the human remains of bone, of a bone chip, and it has to be the size of a barley kernel, is that with or without the shell? Okay? So even though we have a halacha Moshe Mizina, but there was obviously over the course of time, some loss of the Mesorah, and so these questions come up. So, b'klipasa below b'klipasa, balacha b'yevesha, moist or dried. Obviously, moist, it's plumper, it's bigger. So now the Gemara just simply explains, what bothered Rav Ashi didn't bother Rav Papa. What bothered Rav Papa did not bother Rav Ashi. So Rav Ashi, let me buy lehad Rav Papa gasit marko kama de gasa. Now, as far as Rav Ashi was concerned, it's a date with the pit. And I know that because look back at the Mishnah. The Mishnah says kikoseves hagasa, the plump date. The plumper, the better. The one with the pit is more plump. Rav Papa, lo mi bai lehad Rav Ashi. And as far as Rav Papa was concerned, Rav Ashi's question didn't bother him. Lacha shibos mikre, shibolas mikre. If it's moist, it's not called saora, it's called shibolas. And shalobikli pasa, and without a shell, Ushla Mikre. It has a different terminology. So in other words, the word Sora is very specific to that which is dried, but still with a shell on top of it. Okay. So in other words, Rav Ashi had his question, Rav Papa had his question, but the Gemara notes, the two questions did not overlap. Okay, we'll stop over here. Tomorrow, we pick it up. Question on the table is, when we say a Koseves Hagasa, are we talking about a date with the pit, without the pit? We will discuss a lot of halachas tomorrow. Sukkah halachas coming up. A lot of sukkah halachas coming up tomorrow. And just in general, basically shiurim. Big today's daf, tomorrow's daf. A big discussion within the world of shiurim. Okay, we'll stop over here. Tomorrow we pick it up on the...
Really, without a pit, the volume is the same. The weight will be the same.
Right, but it's a volume. It's really a volume discussion.